SFMSports.net. On air, online, mobile, on demand.
And now, it's college football. Here are your hosts, Joe Miller and Pete Medhurst.
It's college football. Joe Miller and Pete Medhurst. And I guess, Pete, first of all, introduce ourselves a little bit here in our new podcast form. We're going to cover college football and not only give you this preview, the SEC preview, but we'll preview all the major conferences, including the AAC, in our podcast form. And just real quickly, Pete, you and I, part of the Navy Radio Network. You're the play-by-play voice for Navy football. I'm the sideline reporter slash analyst. But we're gonna cover all of college football. We certainly will have a lean a little bit towards the AAC, but we want to take a broad view of college football and look at all the teams in college football. And you and I have worked together on different radio stations for, several years now,
yeah.
In Baltimore and D.C., and we're just looking for an outlet to talk some college football, so here we are.
You know, and when you talk about the SEC, Joe, you know, every year it seems we're talking about the national champion coming from this league, and while I think there are some teams, in fact, I'm probably going to shock you, my dark horse for the national champion does come from this league, but it's probably not who you think. I think you're in and you're out. You have to start here with college football, and I think what was interesting this year is the coaching changes. And when you look at the guys that that moved around, you got Will Muschamp somehow coming up with a second chance in the vein of getting this job at South Carolina, where there, let's face it, there are a lot of questions about him there. And when you think about Steve Spurrier there, we think about that year that they seemed to have everything aligned. You had multiple first round picks with Clowney and Melvin Ingram, and you thought that was going to be their year. And when it wasn't, it seemed like the air came out of the South Carolina balloon a little bit. We were down there that year. Navy played them that year. Navy was winning by 21-17 going to the fourth quarter. And I remember I was at that time the sideline guy, and I'm listening to this place. This place is, it's one of the loudest places I've ever seen in college football, and yet these people were in a little bit of a panic because here was Navy leading by four. Now, obviously, with Marcus Lattimore, they were able to rally for the victory, but there's just been something that's just not been right about South Carolina ever since then, Joe. And I don't know if Will Muschamp, in terms of what he's proven, I mean, he's a good coordinator. I don't think anybody will doubt that. But, you know, now him and his staff have got to get in there and do the work. They just need better Jimmys and Joes. That's what it comes down to in South Carolina.
Yeah, let's do a quick overview. Last year, as you mentioned, three new coaches into the SEC. You mentioned Will Muschamp went from Auburn defensive coordinator to South Carolina. Of course, he was the former Florida head coach. Barry Odom was the defensive coordinator at Missouri. He's now the head coach. We'll get to Missouri in a little bit. So much going on there. Not necessarily in the football department, but in the whole athletic department. And then Kirby Smart goes from Alabama defensive coordinator to Georgia head coach. And I think as we go through this preview, there's two overarching themes in the SEC this year, and that's quarterback competition and who's going to step up at quarterback. And then I think the other thing is we get into this, you look at the September schedule for everybody, it's crazy how many important games are going to be played in the month of September in the SEC. But let's talk a little bit more about South Carolina. 3-9 last season. They haven't had back-to-back losing seasons since 2002 and 2003. But I think, Pete, everybody assumes that this is going to be a struggle year for them. And you mentioned it. Spurrier, three straight 11-2 seasons in 2011, 12, and 13. They've got a quarterback battle like a lot of teams in the SEC this year. Former walk-on Perry Orth battling true freshman Brandon McIlwain. But they were terrible last year on offense. When you look at the numbers, Pete, 117 in red zone touchdowns, 102 in third down conversions. Their quarterbacks combined just to complete 54% of the passes. They threw not much better on defensive side of the football. They've allowed more points than any other team the last 2 years in the SEC. And bad against the run. They allowed 217 yards on the ground a game last year, Pete. So
see, I think that right there, you hit the number right there. The one thing about South Carolina, even during the Spurrier era, their quarterback play was – they didn't have NFL-quality quarterback play at that time. And if you look at Steve Spurrier through the years, he's only had a couple of guys that have, you know, at least gotten cups of coffee, hung around in the NFL for a little while. But South Carolina, through that 11-2 run, always good on defense. Always good on defense.
Well, I don't think
and right now they couldn't they you're giving up 217 yards on the ground. I mean, in a league, let's face it, Joe, in a league where quarterback play is not really good for some of these teams, you're just giving them an outlet to beat you when you allow that kind of yardage on the ground.
The other thing that they had, and you mentioned before, is a bell cow at running back. They don't have that again this season. There's some guys in the mix. But I don't think it's a surprise that we've seen Clemson over the last couple of years start to step up their game. And at the same time, South Carolina has gone down a few notches. And I know that's not a popular thing down in Columbia, South Carolina. But I don't think that that's too much of a surprise. And the question, the big question, Pete, is will Muschamp the guy to get this done for South Carolina? It was a hire that didn't have a lot of enthusiasm when it was made.
Well, I mean, if you believe a lot of the rumored reports, obviously they allegedly had targeted Tom Herman, who is at Houston, who we're very familiar with. And essentially, Tom didn't think it was the right move at the right time right now.
Well,
and
if you look at Muschamp's tenure at Florida, nothing there says, oh, my God, I'm super excited to have this guy as my head coach.
No, and I think that's, you know, let's face it, in the SEC.
So he has something to prove as well.
Right. There has to be some sizzle with your bacon in the SEC. I mean, that's just the nature of the league, the nature of the business. And, you know, I think he's going to be hungry to turn it around. But I think he and his staff, Joe, they've got a long road ahead of them because, it as I said earlier, it comes down to Jimmy's and Joe's in that league. And you've just got to go get some people. You've got a nice throng of kids in state. But right now, they're losing a lot of those kids to Clemson. And let's face it. I mean, it's hard to play catch-up in the SEC. You get that far down in the SEC, it's hard to get back up.
Well, for a while, South Carolina, and it's still a very good high school hotbed, but they were, you know, with Clowney and the guys that they produced for like a 3 or 4 year stretch. I mean, that was where you were getting some of the big time high school prospects. Let's go on to Vanderbilt. 4-8 last season. Derek Mason in his third year. Overall, just 2-14 in his tenure at Vanderbilt. Once again, a team with some issues at quarterback. Kyle Shermer was a freshman last year, took over midseason, expected to be the starter this season. But if you look at the numbers, and I'll throw these out for you, Pete, they're not pretty. 5.5 yards per attempt last year for Vanderbilt throwing the football, 120 out of 127. The last 8 years, they've had their number one quarterback throw more interceptions than touchdowns 4 times in the last 8 years. Good running game, and I think the good news is Derek Mason at least has built a defensive, I wouldn't say juggernaut, but they're going in the right direction. They allowed 12 fewer points last season than they did the previous season. But this, for me, for Vanderbilt, a good running back in Ralph Webb, but they have to have some ability to throw the football down the field.
Well, you got to be able to make a play every now and then. I mean, you get in close games, you got to be able to stay in there and make a play. Now, Shermer obviously has terrific lineage, you know, with his family, savvy football guy. You know, I feel for a kid like Andrew Jelks, the offensive lineman. Here was a kid who was a freshman on the all-freshman team 2 years ago, a tackle. Now he's a guy that's going to end up having to apply for a fifth year because of another leg injury. So it's going to be 2 years in a row where, you know, they're not going to have a guy that they thought would be really an all-conference caliber lineman by this time in his career. You know, Joe, it's hard to you get a lineman of that quality. It's hard to replace those kind of players in your lineup. So if when you're a little, you know, weak up front, the depth at that quarterback position is, you know, questionable. Stan Cavage, a kid that they thought was going to be in the mix, at least in the 2 and 3 spot for that job, he's another guy that's going to be out for another season. So it's kind of like right now, I mean, it's kind of, you know, Kyle Shermer or bust. But here's a case where, in my mind, Derek Mason, another guy that, again, came from a great staff at Stanford, but they're there. They're kind of like right there at, you know, bowl games door, ready to knock on the door, you know, 4-8. But somehow you've got to find a way to win another couple of SEC games, because even when you look at their schedule, you know, early in the campaign, they have a chance to get off to a great start, Joe. I mean, they've got South Carolina right away on a Thursday night as their opener in the SEC. And then, you know, Middle Tennessee, Georgia Tech, and Western Kentucky. To me, those should be 50-50 games for Vanderbilt at this point. Now, whether they are or not, Middle Tennessee, good club, probably going to, you know, give them a problem. But that game is at home in Nashville.
And quite so. The style switch from one week Georgia Tech to Western Kentucky next week. I don't care who you are, and it's doubly tough for Vanderbilt. The stat going out on them, 54 turnovers the last 2 years by Vanderbilt. I don't care who you are. You're not going to be able to overturn that, and especially in a conference in the SEC. Kentucky, 5-7 last year. Mark Stoops in his fourth year, and this is a program that has shown some flashes that have gotten once again to that bowl cusp. They haven't been to a bowl since 2010. Patrick Tulls leaves to go to Boston College, their starting quarterback last year, but he threw 14 interceptions for Kentucky last year. He was the guy, if you watch some of their games, that was just back-breaking interception was, you know, the definition of some of those picks. This, to me, is an interesting team. They have nice running back and Stanley Boom Williams, good receivers, a nice tight end. They're very excited about their sophomore quarterback, Drew Barker. He was a big recruit for them, a big signing for them. Probably one of the more heralded ones since you go back to Lorenzen or Couch at Kentucky. The defense, they got to make some plays. You expect Stoops to make that an improved unit. But this is a team, Pete, to me, that feels like there's something there. And if this quarterback, this young kid Barker, is what they think he is, you know, I'm not saying they're going to get 10 for any division title or anything, but I think this could be a surprise team.
Well, we'll know week two. They play Florida on the road.
And they haven't beaten Florida in forever.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, you know, we'll know right away about them. I'll be honest with you, Joe, I don't think their opener is a gimme either with Southern Miss. I mean, you know, Southern Miss was a team a couple years ago after Larry Fedora left that they barely looked like a Division I product. And, again, with Todd Monken leaving, though, to go to the NFL, one wonders what Southern Miss might look like. But that's an interesting game for Kentucky to start the season. The good news is it's at home. But then you go on the road to Florida in week number two. You got Alabama coming up in week number four. I think we're going to find out quickly about Kentucky. But I like what Mark Stoops has done there, Joe. I think, again, as you mentioned, you know, they're right there. They're at five wins. Where are they going to break through, though? They need a breakthrough SEC win, because to get to 6 or 7 in that league, you've got to beat some people within your league. That's where that next step has to come for Kentucky, in my mind.
Yeah, offense looking better. Defense for Mark Stoops, a defensive guy, needs to step up. You look at the stat going out on them, just 53 tackles for a loss last season by the entire defense. That was tied for 122nd in college football last year. Now on to Missouri, 5-7 last year. New head coach Barry Odom. And Pete, this offense last year was simply god-awful. The numbers, 13.6 points per game. Last year, 13.6 in 2015, Pete, is really, really bad offense. That was the worst average for a Missouri team since 1971. Here's their ranking in across the board on the offensive side, and this is out of 127 teams. They were 127 in points, 125th in yards, 120 in rushing, 113 in passing, 122nd in third down efficiency, and 105 in red zone efficiency. They averaged just 2.8 yards per carry last year.
And where's that going to get better, Joe? That's the question. Where's that going to get better? Oh, by the way, let me give you three of their first five at West Virginia. Georgia comes to Columbia, and then at LSU. The only breathers in there are Eastern Michigan and Delaware State.
And I think Odom gets the job. Their defense was really good last year. They return 8 guys. They only allowed 16.2 points per game. So that's a really good number. That was their best at Missouri.
But if you're him and you have a bad year, you've got a new AD that's just taking over there. I mean, it's not inconceivable that this could be one and done for Barry Odom. I mean, I know they would have to pay him off in terms of what remains on the contract, but when you have a new AD that comes in after you've been given the job with all the turmoil they've had in that athletic department, I hope for his sake, I hope they do have some modicum of success. That way, the AD doesn't pull the plug, and then you're really hosing the players again at that point by bringing in new leadership. You know, I watched him a little bit at SEC Media Day, and you know, he says all the right things. You know, he comes across in a positive coach's way, but again, it's the SEC. You know, I mean, where are the wins going to come from, especially in that first month of the season? That schedule is not kind.
The good news is they do return their quarterback, Drew Locke. The bad news, though, he's in a little bit of a battle. I think he'll win the job, but his quarterback rating last year, and this is the college quarterback rating, was 90.5. That was the third worst in all of college football. Now on to Mississippi State, 9-4 last year, averaged 34 points per game. A team last year, I think at the beginning of the season, people had as a dark horse contender as far as maybe, you know, getting to the SEC championship game. Obviously, you'd have to go through Alabama and the West to do that. But, you know, it's the number one question for them all season is, how do you replace Dak Prescott? The last 2 years, they were 10-3 in 2014. As I mentioned, 9-4 last year. He was the first Mississippi State quarterback to go back-to-back 3,000-yard seasons passing. He combined for 11,585 total yards the last 3 years. That's 63% of Mississippi State's offense. Nick Fitzgerald is expected to win the quarterback competition. Played a little bit last year for him, but good receiver to throw to in Fred Ross. But simply, how do you replace somebody like Dak Prescott?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, not only do you have to replace his ability, but you've got to replace his leadership and his moxie. I mean, this is a guy that's not afraid of the moment. Always seemed to rise to that moment. They had four guys overall in that battle for the quarterback spot. Elijah Staley announcing that he was going to transfer, so that takes one of those guys out. I think if you gave Dan Mullen some truth serum, I think maybe deep down they would like the redshirt freshman Nick Tiano maybe to eventually win that job, and that's a guy that I think you could see at that position at some point for them. But to me, replacing what Dak Prescott brought you from a leadership standpoint, in addition to his ability, I think that is where you're going to miss him.
Plus, he's a huge part of the running game, too. And that's, as we've seen with Dan Mullen offenses in the past, that's tough to replicate, too, if you don't have that right style of quarterback. You almost have to change your entire scheme and philosophy a little bit.
No doubt, no doubt. And I think you'll see it go maybe certainly early in the year. It'll be more of a conservative plate offensively, whereas with Dak Prescott, Joe, you could do anything you wanted at almost any time.
Yeah, they also have to replace their defensive coordinator, Manny Diaz. He left to go join Mark Richt's staff at the University of Miami. They struggled against the run last year. They allowed
How many places has Manny Diaz been now, by the way? He's like the guy that every time a new coach gets a job, he's their defensive coordinator.
They allowed over 200 yards rushing in 8 of their last 15 games. So they got to improve that on the defensive side. And the interesting split on that, when you look at the numbers from first half to second half, talking about teams wearing down, they allowed 3.7 yards a carry in the first half. That's not great, but certainly not great. But in the second half, they allowed a yard more, 4.8. So you see a team that wears down defensively. They didn't cause a lot of turnovers as well. So Mississippi State with some issues, obviously trying to replace Dak Prescott. On to Arkansas. 8-5 last year. Brett Bielema seems to have them going in the right direction. You look at his overall conference record, though, just 7-17 against the SEC. But they not only do they have to replace their quarterback, they got to replace Alex Collins, their top running back. Brandon Allen threw for, I think a lot of people would be surprised that he threw for 3,400 yards last year and 30 touchdowns. That's a lot of production. Alex Collins ran for 1,500 yards last season. He went over 1,000 yards three straight seasons. You know, it's a lot to ask to replace your starting quarterback and your bell cow running back, who was such a huge part of your offense.
I love Collins. I mean, you know, that was a guy that I thought could go as high as the third round, maybe in the NFL draft. I think Seattle got him as an absolute steal where they did. And you know, Brandon Allen's another one of those guys, Joe. If you line up at the YMCA. You know, Brandon Allen's probably not the first guy or second guy that somebody's going to pick to play pickup football. But, Joe, all he did was find a way to make plays and win. And those are traits that, again, trying to find replacements for those guys. But you know what, though? I think Brett Bielema, believe it or not, I think he, with all his quirkiness and, you know, I think he's a good football coach.
Well, here's to that point. You credit Bielema. Third in fewest turnovers last year. They only had 11. And maybe more impressively, Pete, they were number 6 in fewest penalty yards.
Well, and you know, I mean, look, Joe, we watch college football every week. Not only do we watch the games live, we're at, I mean, but the team that we cover all the time, the Naval Academy. Why do they win a lot of games? Joe, they don't commit penalties. They're the least penalized team in America.
You don't commit penalties. You don't turn the ball over. You're going to put yourself
absolutely
in a lot of games.
Look, gaining 10 yards every four plays is extremely tough in this sport right now for just about anybody. So if you're not giving away yardage, you bring it up all the time. In a lot of your stats, you talk about it's hidden yardage. If you're not giving away 80 to 100 yards a game, then you're going to be right there. If you're not giving the offense cheap five-yard penalties by jumping offside, committing pass interference, and giving them 15 yards, well, you're helping yourself stay in the football game. The question is, you know, where's Arkansas going to get 20 to 22 points a game this year? And I think those are valid questions that you have to ask. And, you know, early in the season, we'll find out. They play TCU two games into the season, and we'll find out what they're all about.
Drew Morgan returns, wide receiver, was all SEC last year, second team. Good tight end there, too. But, and I think one thing that might shift a little bit for them, you look at last year, they were 58-42 run-pass ratio. That might switch a little bit this season. But you mentioned interesting week two at TC, probably their toughest road game of the season. It's not often we say that an out-of-conference team, a game, is the toughest road game in the SEC, but they get Bama, LSU, A&M, and in Florida all at home this year. So the schedule does sync up nicely.
Outside of Auburn and Jordan-Hare, you're right. I mean, you look at the road tests in the league, and let's face it, if you're ever going to upset somebody, it's usually going to be in your own ballpark. So those are all tough squads that will be coming to Fayetteville, but if you're ever going to get them, it's going to be on your own field.
Down to Texas A&M. And once again, quarterback issues and the turmoil the last season for them, or last couple seasons. They had Kyle Allen. He threw for over 2,000 yards, 17 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He says, no, I don't want to stay anymore. He goes to Houston. They had the number one recruit, according to some, Kyler Murray, who they kind of forced into the picture a little bit. He transfers to Oklahoma. He'll sit out this season. Kenny Hill, who started a couple years ago in that Thursday night opener against South Carolina and lit up the Gamecocks, he already had transferred to TCU. And enter Trevor Knight, a very familiar name to a lot of people. He was the starting quarterback back at Oklahoma, would have some good games and then would take, it was like he would have three steps forward and take four steps back. He never seemed to consistently grab a hold of the quarterback spot at Oklahoma. He transfers to Texas A&M. What in the world is going on there?
Well, my biggest question about Trevor Knight, can he do what Kevin Sumlin traditionally wants to do with his offense? I think that's the big thing to me. But yet, if you were Texas A&M, you had to have somebody. I mean, everybody left. I mean, it's just insane to see what occurred there. And obviously, only those on the inside will really know what happened there and those relationships. But let's face it, Joe, a couple of years, Kevin Sumlin was a guy everybody wanted. USC was interested in Kevin Sumlin.
The NFL
was interested in Kevin Sumlin. Now, I think you bring up a great question is, what does Kevin Sumlin have to do to stay at Texas A&M? And can that be achieved this year with the quality of that league? And I love Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett's going to be a guy that goes first day of the NFL draft next season. But is he enough in that caliber of a league to get you over the top against good opposition? Because your offense right now, you have absolutely no idea what you're going to get. But you'll find out, because you're going to have to score points to beat UCLA in the opener.
Yeah, they got great receiving core. The question is, can Knight get the ball to him often enough? The running back question, a little bit of a question mark there. You know, defensively, you mentioned Myles Garrett. John Chavis in his second year, he's been a huge factor for them. But you do wonder, Pete, because, you know, 8-5 the last 2 years with some expectations with Kevin Sumlin. And here's the other thing. People talk about how tough it is to go into Kyle Field, too. And I think this factors in as well. They've lost at least two home games in five straight seasons at Kyle Field. And it's one thing to sort of have that upper, hey, we should compete for SEC titles for Sumlin. But you also got to win your home games.
UCLA comes there to open the season, so it's a great chance for them to reestablish their home field.
I think they got to get to 9 wins. And I think maybe
8, and doing it in a positive way where you play, you know, some close games at Bryant-Denny against Alabama. But to me, you've got to go on the road. And this year, you've got to go on the road and win a game like Mississippi State, where you probably have the talent advantage. That's a game you can't lose. Tennessee comes, you know, to College Station. LSU comes to College Station. So you're going to have opportunity in front of your own fans and a game against Arkansas that's on a neutral field at AT&T Stadium. You've got to get your people fired up about what you're doing. And if you can win somehow two of those three games, I think it gets the enthusiasm and it gets the donors and alumni back on board with Kevin Sumlin there at Texas A&M. Conceivably, if you lose all three of those games, you're probably looking at a 6-6 campaign, 7-5 tops. And I'm not sure that will keep people happy there based on the expectations they have in that league.
On to the Florida Gators, who won the East last year under first-year head coach Jim McElwain. And this was maybe a little bit of a surprise team last year in that you had Will Grier develop as a starting quarterback, and everybody thought, wow, this team can compete in the SEC in McElwain's first year. He gets popped. He's suspended for, you know, steroid use, essentially. I forget the exact drug that he was knocked out of. But, you know, they go to Treyon Harris. They couldn't throw the football with Treyon Harris. And you saw down the stretch they struggled offensively. So you have, fast forward to this year, Greer's out. You look at the quarterback here, battle here. You have Jack Del Rio's son, Luke Del Rio, who initially went to Oregon State. He's transferred in. And then Austin Appleby, who was a starter at Purdue, he transfers here. There's two transfer Purdue quarterbacks in the SEC this year, one at Florida, one at LSU. The battle right now between Appleby and Del Rio for the quarterback job, as I mentioned, they scored just 23 points per game last year, but Pete, they also couldn't run the ball. You look at their numbers for a Florida team. You know, Kelvin Taylor went over 1,000 yards. He's gone. Of course, the much ballyhooed sideline sort of eruption between him and McElwain last season. But 3.5 yards per carry, the lowest at Florida since 1992. That was surprising to me. But where you look at the quarterback position, Del Rio, Appleby, you know, I think they're leaning towards Del Rio a little bit, but Appleby is intriguing to me because his numbers at Purdue weren't terrible. The interceptions were high, but I often look at him and say, look, he's at Purdue. He's got to make some plays, and he probably was forcing some things in there. The good thing is they've got an excellent defense, as they've always had. Their quarterback, Jalen Tabor, and their safety, Marcus May, are two of the best in the country. So this is a team that seems to fit the formula of a lot of Florida teams. Good defensive team, but struggles on the offensive side.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, you know, Jim McElwain, I think Jim McElwain's a good football coach. He's another guy that comes through that Nick Saban tree of coaches. And I think eventually he's going to find a way to get it done. But what does it say when you have Purdue transfers in your league at quarterback? I mean, how many games has Purdue won the last few years?
Not many.
Thank you. So maybe it does come down to system. Maybe you need a little bit more. I don't know. But I think that's the challenge. Jim McElwain's a good offensive guy. I think he'll find a way to make something happen. The question is, can you make enough happen? I don't think, based on at least what we know of what they have now, I think 10 wins is asking a lot for this team. I think they could get to 8. And I think 8 is a really positive season if Florida gets there. And if they catch a break or two, then maybe they do get to 9 or 10. But I think 8 right now, in my mind, is a good ceiling for this Florida team.
Offensive line needs to be better. They allowed 45 sacks last season. If they want to be an upper echelon squad, that offensive line has to get better. You look at Mississippi, they're 10-3 last season. This is the one team that has a returning quarterback in Chad Kelly, threw for over 4,000 yards, 31 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. The 13 interceptions always pops up to people that are critical of Kelly. But you look at his progressive progression through the season, he only threw one interception in the final four starts. 49% of his completions went for 15 or more yards. This, to me, they do lose Laquon Treadwell at wide receiver. They've got some solid guys. Evan Engram, their tight end. Quincy Adebojo, their other wide receiver. They averaged 40 points a game last season, Pete. This is an offense that is probably primed to put up similar numbers this season.
Yeah, no doubt. And quite frankly, they are my dark horse to win the national championship. I think they have an exciting offense. I think they have the potential to an awful lot of things. And in a league where quarterback play is devoid, I love their quarterback. I know he does some silly things, but I love the guy. And quite frankly, I think he's a guy that is going to have a huge year. And I know there's been a lot of distraction there, but I think they're going to be hungry to get on the football field. And every time they come out on the football field, Joe, they're going to be eager to do something great. And quite frankly, I think this is a club that has the moxie. The quarterback has the moxie to play in the big moment. Now, missing Laquon Treadwell is huge. There's no doubt about that. But I think this is the club that has a quarterback that can go make a play when they need to at any time.
4,542 total yards last year. That was sixth best in the country and the third most ever in the SEC. Their season's going to be defined by September, Pete. They open up with Orlando on Monday night, on Labor Day night. Then they go to Alabama 12 days later. They also play Georgia. In between there, a game against Wofford. I mean, they also go to at Arkansas and at LSU later in the season.
No doubt. But the schedule does present itself. That's the thing to me. You're going to know. You got a chance to get some quality wins. And if you do so, you're going to have the kind of wins that the playoff committee is going to go, this is the top four team, and we need to pick them. So I think the opportunity, that's what is the big thing to me. Everything sets up perfectly for Ole Miss from a scheduling standpoint.
Let's talk about the Auburn Tigers, 7-6 last season for Auburn. And this is another team, Pete. You look at quarterback issues. Jeremy Johnson struggled at times last season. And sort of I think this is, and maybe this is the effect from Cam Newton when we saw at Auburn and Gus Malzahn and the quarterback that we expect the Auburn quarterback to look like sometimes and what the quarterback he wants it to be. I think they were stuck a little bit between running some of what their stuff they wanted to do last year, maybe becoming more of a, evolving into a little bit more of a running team. But there's some talent in the backfield at the wide receiver spot. But you look at this Auburn team, 7-6 last season. They averaged 27.5 points per game, which on the surface seems pretty good, but that's the lowest it's ever been under Malzahn. And I think there are some people starting to creep into, Gus Malzahn. What does he have to do to stick around?
I think we're finding out, and Cam Newton's such a polarizing figure in many ways, but Joe, I think we're finding out just how good he really was, to be honest with you. And life after him is not going to look like that because he is a special player. And again, that comes back to, and I know we get caught up in this. Sometimes guys are just really good coordinators, Joe. I mean, I really truly believe that's what it comes down to. Now you're the CEO of the program that has to go, tit for tat with Alabama every year in your own state just for popularity. And obviously, in this case, 7-6 is not going to do it when Alabama was winning national championships. So you've got to go out and find that player, and they just haven't been able to do that. Now they got issues at running back where that depth has now been pierced pretty considerably. And the question is as you mentioned, to answer your question, how do you score points? And where are they going to get the points from? And right now, as you mentioned, the last couple of years statistically, maybe trying to run the ball a little bit more. Well, how are they going to do that now?
Yeah, and I think they get stuck in this little quagmire when you don't have a true number one. You've got White, who's more your traditional passing quarterback. You got Johnson, who's more your traditional running quarterback. And then you're stuck in between two minds when you're trying to figure out what you want to do offensively. And I think that's never a good thing. And I think that's where they've been last season.
Especially when that's your calling card.
And once again, first month of the season, we go back to these two themes, quarterback play in the first month of the season in the SEC. They open with Clemson. Obviously, not a
But opportunity, though.
Yes.
It is opportunity.
They have Clemson, A&M, and LSU in the first 21 days of the college football season. But, good news, they're all at home.
I think the middle game is okay, but the other two are going to be, slobber knockers. The Clemson game can break your spirit right away, depending on how well. And the Tigers, the Tigers are going to be pumped up. They're going to see SEC team on the schedule. Dabo's going to have those guys ready to go. LSU, you're going to get a steady dose of Leonard Fournette. Is their rushing defense good enough to stop a guy of that caliber? And, I mean, I think they can go 1-2 in that stretch. I think the A&M game is an absolute must at home. If they go 0-3 through that stretch, this is going to be a very, very tough year And you're looking at the potential of 7-6 or 6-6, certainly through the 12 regular season games, quite possibly again here for the Tigers.
They got to work through another new defensive coordinator with Muschamp leaving to go be the head coach of South Carolina. Now on to Georgia. Speaking of defensive coordinators becoming head coaches, Kirby Smart. He's never been a head coach anywhere at any level. Does that concern you at all?
No, because I think what it is it's a smart guy that doesn't take bad jobs. Just to be a head coach. So many guys do that in college football, and then they go by the wayside. They never get another opportunity again. I mean, if you're Kirby Smart, you're always making close to $1 million a year as a coordinator, as one of the most sought-after coordinators in the country. And now a great opportunity comes to you at Georgia. So you take this opportunity. I mean, if you're going to sink or swim, why not at Georgia? There are far worse places that you could be to try and do this. And, you know, again, as you mentioned, you know, schedule is part of the theme here for Georgia, too. I mean, they've got an opportunity to get off to a solid start. The
they open up against North Carolina.
Which is a sneaky big game.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, Mark Richt's there for 15 years. He ran the offense. So I wonder if what the adjustment period is there. They bring in Jim Chaney, who's been now at Tennessee, Arkansas, and Georgia's the offensive coordinator. He was at Pitt last season. And, you know, three different offenses, too. He's kind of a chameleon. He'll run what is best suited for you as far as an offensive
Which is not all that bad. Sometimes you get offensive coordinators and coaches who are not flexible at all.
And ding, 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 another quarterback battle going on here. You have Grayson Lambert, who's the incumbent, the transfer from UVA, who did okay last season, but I don't think you ever asked Grayson Lambert to win a game.
I don't think he can.
You know, 12 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. On the surface, the numbers don't look bad, but the numbers don't tell the entire story. The big games was where some of the issues were. They bring in Jacob Eason, who was widely regarded as the number one quarterback recruit in the nation. He's a true freshman. Bryce Ramsey, who was that guy a couple years ago, is competing for the job. That battle's going on. The good news is, you know, I think you can make the argument that four of the top 8-9 running backs in the country play in the SEC, mm-hmm. and two might be at Georgia right now, and Sony Michel, who got a tremendous amount of playing time after Nick Chubb's injury. But, Pete, Nick Chubb, 92 attempts last year. He averaged 8.1 yards per attempt. Of course, he had the injury, the gruesome injury against Tennessee. In every game he's started, he's run for over 100 yards. So 13 times he started, he's gone over 100 yards in every one of those games in his career. His career average is 121 yards per game. I know Fournette gets a lot of the pub, and with due respect, but this kid is really, really good. And if he's healthy, this offense is going to be Michelle and Chubb.
Which is not bad considering their quarterback position. And quite frankly, having both of those guys, I wouldn't think long and hard about maybe playing the freshman right away at quarterback and just letting him learn and letting him go, because you've got a great opportunity to use those two guys to your advantage, especially early in the season. I agree with you on Nick Chubb, and you know, let's face it, you know, Todd Gurley was so good there, and it's been a school that has been able to recruit running backs. I mean, you know, they had a kid drafted in the 7th round by the Redskins who obviously, you know, had some injury issues too, but lightning quick, he couldn't get on the field because they had guys like Gurley and like Chubb in the pipeline there. So I think for Kirby Smart's sake, I think it's great that you've got proven guys at that position where you can maybe get away with coaching a little conservatively early but in the season, because you're worried about whether Grayson Lambert can win a big
at
game
at some point,
even
though,
right out of the gate against North Carolina.
At some point, though, if you want to win the SEC and you want to win a national championship, your quarterback is going to have to make some plays.
No doubt.
And at some point, somebody's going to step up. You know, the last 2 years,
here's what you need to know. Grayson Lambert was life and death for the quarterback job at Virginia.
Right, he lost the job at Virginia. That's why he transferred to Georgia.
That's what I mean. I mean, he was life and death for the job at Virginia at a program, just like we said earlier about Purdue, Joe. How many games did Virginia win when Grayson Lambert was there? Wait a minute. Oh, their coach is now coaching at Maryland. Okay.
Well, their passing's been pretty poor the last 2 years, under 200 yards passing, and that's for a team that wants to throw the ball. That's unacceptable after six straight seasons under Mark Richt, over 200 yards a game. There's some question marks at wide receiver. They're not as deep and talented, I think, as some of the other wide receiving cores in the SEC, so there might be a little bit of an adjustment there. Defense was fantastic last year, just under 17 points per game. That was best for them since 2005. Great secondary, number one in yards allowed passing last season, and that's with just 21 sacks, which is a big factor. If you're getting the quarterback, you know, you're going to, if they increase that sack number by 10 to 12, which they have a shot to, and get a little bit better against the run, this could be an elite defense with Kirby Smart. But they've had some issues there with some guys coming back. Tim Kimbrough, whether he's going to be there, doesn't look like he is. He's going to lead the team. He's their top linebacker. So there are some question marks, but they were really good last year.
Yes or no? Do they beat North Carolina and Atlanta?
I'm a big believer in North Carolina, but I still say Georgia wins that game.
Okay.
You got two. Mitch Trubisky comes in as the starter at North Carolina. Whoever starts at Georgia, I think Georgia still, they're going to run the ball too well and too efficient in that game. Tennessee, 9-4 last
All
year.
All hype club right here,
this
buddy.
This is it, Pete. They ended the season on a 7-game winning streak. I think the biggest question for them is, as you mentioned, how do they handle the hype? How will they handle being the favorite in the East? Because they're clearly the favorite in the East. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think they are the team that everybody thinks is the team to beat in the East. You know, and when you throw that up to last year, they had fourth quarter leads against Bama, fourth quarter lead against Florida, almost a 13-point lead with late to go, and they blew that game. They were tied in the fourth quarter with Oklahoma and lost. You know, this was a team that could not handle those situations in game last year. But simply, how do they handle being the number one, having the target on their back?
App State right out of the gate, no problem on a Thursday night. But the battle at Bristol against my man Justin Fuente at the Virginia Tech Hokies. And you know, Joe, their first three SEC games are at home against Florida, on the road at Georgia, and then at Texas A&M. So we'll know by October 8th where they are.
And this is another team that has a returning quarterback in Joshua Dobbs, but still some questions about said quarterback. Numbers not bad, 15 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, ran for 671 yards. And it may be surprising, you look at their running numbers last year, and I'll throw this a stat out for you. Last year they had three guys go over 600 yards rushing. It was the first time in the history of their program they've ever had three guys go over 600 yards rushing in the same season. Jalen Hurd returns nearly 1,300 yards last year, 12 touchdowns for them. 62-38 run-pass ratio. I think they probably would like to bring that down, but then, once again, same situation as we said with other teams in the SEC. Do they trust Dobbs enough to make enough plays in the passing game to win them a division title and then get to the SEC championship
their
game?
Their whole season, Joe, comes down to a 4-game stretch with no bye weeks.
Yep.
This is a 4-game stretch, Florida, Georgia, Texas A&M, and Alabama, because then they have a bye week and their finishing stretch is South Carolina, Tennessee Tech, Kentucky, Missouri, and Vanderbilt. So you're going to know if you're a Tennessee fan whether you're making reservations for the Georgia Dome by October 15th.
Yeah, their schedule completely opens up.
Alabama at home, by the way. So that's, again, when you look at plus and minuses of the schedule. October 15th, they're going to know where they're at.
Yeah. Bring in a new defensive coordinator, Bob Shoup, who was the defensive coordinator at Penn State, had a lot of success over the last couple of years. Kind of interesting. They were very good defensively, but they fired their defensive coordinator in January. You know, whatever you want to listen to and why, the reasons he was fired. But excellent cornerback in Cameron Sutton. Great defensive end in Derek Barnett. Maybe the emerging star on the defensive side in college football for them. They were fantastic. Number 2 in the country last year on third down conversion defense. They allowed just 27% of their opponents on third down. But as you mentioned, that 4-game stretch, that's the season. September 24th against Florida, October 1st against Georgia, October 8th at A&M, and October 15th, all 4 games in a row against Alabama.
And in concluding on the Volunteers, as much as we talk about Josh Dobbs, he's going to get a lot of headlines. He's going to be a guy that many people, if he gets off to a good start, throw in the Heisman conversation. If they're going to get where they need to go, it's going to be that defense that does it. This is as good a group as they've probably had in quite some time there in Volunteer Land.
You have to give credit to Butch Jones. He's built up the talent base. Mm-hmm. The next question is, with that talent base, can they make the next step? And we're going to find out in that 4-game stretch. And we'll find out that second week of the season against Virginia Tech in Bristol. You know, Virginia Tech is going to be an interesting team. We'll get to them in our ACC preview. That's not going to be an easy game, but I would imagine Tennessee is going to probably be a touchdown or more favorite in that game.
I think they could be double-digit favorite in that game.
Let's move on to LSU, 9-3. Les Miles survives the offseason. Some people, I think, surprised that he did survive the offseason, his 12th season here. Not a quarterback battle here, but still questions about the returning guy, Brandon Harris. Pete, he completed just 54% of his passes last year. Of the qualified quarterbacks in college football, only five had worse completion percentages than Brandon Harris, who threw 13 touchdowns. And I think if you look at the most concerning thing about Harris is, if you look at his season, his chart, it steadily went down as the season progressed. From November on, he only completed 49% of his passes, four touchdowns, six interceptions. So once again, quarterback concerns, but Leonard Fournette returns the All-American, nearly 2,000 yards. And don't forget this name either, Darius Geist, their backup running back. He's overshadowed by Fournette, but he might be one of the best running backs in the country, top 10, top 15. He's just not going to get a couple of carries. Two great wide receivers, Malachi Dupree, Travon Dural.
Wide receiver you, man. I mean, they just keep turning
them
out there.
They've got the specialists, the running backs and the wide receivers, to be special. But the questions remain, can Brandon Harris get it done at the quarterback
spot? That's on Cam Cameron, in my mind. And what it tells me also is you have not recruited well at that spot, because you really don't seem to have anybody pushing him, because if you did, that guy would be getting a decent amount of playing time right now because of the inconsistency of Brandon Harris. You can't ask for a better skill situation than what LSU has. I don't put that necessarily as much on Les Miles as I do. I didn't like the selection of Cam Cameron as the offensive coordinator at the time. And when you're looking around at other offenses that are doing big things around the country and what they're doing, based on the – and I understand why Les is doing it, because he's always had great defensive personnel. So his defense always going to keep other teams usually around 15, 16, 17 points a game, and you don't have to do a lot. But right now, Cam Cameron has got to elevate Brandon Harris's game. This is not on Leonard Fournette. He's going to give you the production. You have wide receivers that are begging for the football. You've got wide receivers that deserve better than 54% accuracy in terms of passing the football. You know, last year, defensively, they weren't as good, so yep, it hurt them not being able to put up some points. And shocker, how many times have you said during the course of this preview, new defensive coordinator,
yep,
new defensive coordinator? Well, guess what? We've got another one at LSU, and I think that's an issue here when you're talking about a team that, if somebody does stop Fournette or keep him from beating you with game-breaking plays, is LSU's defense going to be good enough to stop the better teams in this league?
Dave Aranda comes in from Wisconsin. They were the number one scoring defense in the country last year. LSU on the defensive side gave up 24 points per game, which was their worst output since 1998. Kendall Beck with their star linebacker, he's back. But I think this is a little bit of concern. They switch over to a 3-4-2. They weren't great against the run last year. You switch over to a 3-4, you worry about the personnel there. So I think there's some questions there. My favorite stat about Leonard Fournette, 26% of his carries last year, Pete, went for 10 or more yards. So one out of four times he touched the ball last year, he ran for a first down.
And that's with 100% of the defenses reporting that they were out to stop him on that play.
And my favorite, researching LSU, my favorite offseason story, there was an interview I read with Travon Dural, their wide receiver, who injured his hamstring last year at the end of November last year, and he said he put on 30 pounds, and he said he put on 30 pounds because he strictly went to Popeyes nearly every day. And he said, Popeyes gave me 30 pounds. So he's cut down the weight, though. He's lost the 30 pounds. But just reading that interview, if you can find it, it's a fantastic interview about how Popeyes put 30 pounds on Travon Dural, their wide receiver for LSU. And this, to me, is why Les Miles, if you want a capsule of why he's in trouble, the last 3 years, they're just 14-10 in SEC play. And that's not good enough for LSU, who expects to be in the picture for the national championship. They get Bama at home. They're on the road at Florida. They open up at Lambeau Field against Wisconsin, which is kind of an interesting game. Even though it's in Wisconsin, LSU will be favored in that game, I would imagine. But it's kind of an interesting opener. It's kind of cool that it's in Lambeau. Speaking of teams that are in the mix for the national championship, we'll save the last preview for Alabama here. The defending national champions, four titles in 7 years. What more can you say? Third straight year, the questions will be, who's going to be the starting quarterback? I was reading a preview down in Alabama of sort of the evaluations, and you've got to love the evaluations of the quarterback battle. You have Cooper Bateman coming back. He threw the ball 52 times last year. You have Jalen Hurts, who's a freshman, who I think was a little bit off the pack, but because of his performance in fall camp, he's in the mix now. He was a true freshman in for spring. Blake Barnett, who was kind of the guy last year that they redshirted. The evaluation was, you know, Hurts is the electric guy. Barnett's the guy with the big arm. Bateman's sort of your steady option who's played before. Doesn't really matter, though, who's the quarterback at Alabama. It doesn't seem like it has in the last couple of years.
And that's the genius of the coaching staff there that Nick Saban puts together. It's a collective group because their coaching staff gets poached all the time. Again, what's the theme of this preview, Joe? New defensive coordinator.
Yep.
But, you know, and I think that's that's simply the genius of Nick Saban. That's what it comes down to. He's a great leader of people, puts them all in positions to be successful. Lane Kiffin has successfully transitioned from head coach to coordinator and done the things probably against his own decision-making prowess, where he probably has wanted to do some more things offensively that could be, quote, considered more electric, more exciting. But he's done the things that have been necessary for Alabama to win. When you've had the stable of running backs that they've had, that has also made life easier on the quarterback play there in Alabama.
The difference this year is that they not only have to replace their quarterback, but they replace the running back. And that's a little bit of an unknown that they've had that combo together. The one thing that the new quarterbacks, whether it be Blake Sims or last year with Jay Coker, they've been able to rely on a stud running back to go with them in tandem to help them work through the issues of breaking in a new quarterback. They do have an excellent wide receiver, Calvin Ridley. Unbelievable season last year. Great tight end, O.J. Howard, who really popped in the national championship game against Clemson last year. Expect him to have a big season. As you mentioned, new defensive coordinator Jeremy Pruitt comes over from Georgia defensive coordinator the last couple of seasons. He was the defensive coordinator at Florida State when they won the national championship. Four legit stars on the defensive side of the football field that you will talk about every time you turn on Alabama this year. The nose guard, Dalvin Tomlinson, the defensive end, Jonathan Allen, outside linebacker, Tim Williams, and probably, to me, maybe the best defensive player in college football, their strong safety, Eddie Jackson. Watch them. They're amazing on the defensive side of the football field.
And Joe, they lost a ton of NFL talent.
True.
I mean, they lost. That's the
they only
the
gave
scary
up 2.4 yards per carry last year.
That's an insane number. Insane number in a league that includes Nick Chubb and Leonard Fournette.
That was the best they've done in 16 years. So
You had quarterbacks in that league who could run. So, you know, that yardage is all factored in there. Just amazing what they have been able to build from a defensive standpoint. Jeremy Pruitt, now the man on the spot. The thing that helps you there, though, Joe, as the defensive coordinator, Saban is probably a guy that's in your ear defensively a lot, kind of like Bill Belichick is in New England. So you've got that prowess helping you as well. But, I mean, Jeremy Pruitt's done a good job. He's turned out some terrific talent at Georgia. And you're inheriting equal, if not better, talent now at Alabama. It's very simple to me. They're going to be in a lot of close games against good teams. And as we have talked about with other teams in this league, is your quarterback going to make the critical mistake late in the fourth quarter of a game? Is that new running back going to put the ball on the ground in a key spot in a football game? Because your defense is going to keep you there. I mean, your offense only going to have to make a couple of plays every game with the kind of defensive ability that Alabama has. Questions become, can the running back avoid the plays that will crush you against the better teams? Will they make the plays or the bad plays that will crush you on the road, you know, playing an Ole Miss or somebody like that? Because I think in those games, I think Ole Miss is going to be the one team that's probably, and maybe even Tennessee to a certain extent because of the ability that they have. You're going to have to get to 20, in my mind, to beat Mississippi and beat Tennessee. Will they be able to do that against that caliber of an opponent? I would never sell Nick Saban short, because you watch, I think ESPN has done a great job of being in their camp over the years of getting, you get a taste of what he's like on the practice field. And when you see those little glimpses, you understand why they're a good program. Their attention to detail is amazing. And that's why their attention to detail on game day is amazing.
Positive turnover margin, 14 of the last 15 years. It's a huge stat. It's maybe the most defining stat of the season. And that's why they've been so successful.
Well, you said it earlier, Joe. If you don't turn it over and you don't commit penalties, you're going to be in every football game.
You touched on it before, but the road schedule is tough. They do open up in Arlington against SC, which is an interesting game, but I think they'll be a favorite there against the Trojans. But the road schedule is tough, as you mentioned, at Ole Miss, at Tennessee, at LSU. They lost one game last year. I think they can still survive if they lose one this year.
Yeah, because I think other teams, especially in their division. I mean, that's the difference between their division and Tennessee's side. Tennessee, you know, I think Tennessee, I don't want to say they're home free in that side, but the depth of that division, nowhere near what you see in the West. I mean, the West is just a knockdown, drag out every single week in this league. So, you know, if you slip one time in the West, you're probably still going to be in it. You slip twice, it could be the difference, but protecting home field is going to be so important in the West, I think, to the division winner. When we look back at the end of the season, the team that wins the West is going to be the team that takes care of their business at home, because then there's value when you steal that road win somewhere. If you give away games at home, then it doesn't matter what you do, because you're trying to make up for your shortcomings at home. And we talked about that, you know, with some of the other teams who have struggled mightily, even on their home field. So that's going to be a huge difference. Who can step up and make the play that they need to in a big, big road situation? And that's where, you know, when we come down to all of this at the end of the season, I think my quarterback can make a play. And I think they're going to be hungry to put the distractions behind them. It's asking a lot, because, I mean, there's just so many good football teams, good coaches in this league. But, you know, it's easy to pick Alabama. It's easy to pick Tennessee on the other side.
You like Mississippi on the West side. I'm getting two. I assume that's your lean on the West side. I like LSU on the West side, and I just love their offensive talent. They got to figure things out at the quarterback spot. I do have a little bit of concern about their defense, but I think Dave Aranda will do a good job there, and I like their schedule. I like their schedule more than anything, and I think they're going to win the West. Alabama's going to be right there. You've got Mississippi in the West. I've got Tennessee in the East. I just got to go with that talent and the fact that their schedule is so soft on the backside. Yep. If they can get through 3-1, and I think the questions about quarterbacks at Florida and Georgia are probably too much to overcome there. So I like Tennessee in the East. I like LSU in the West. And I like Tennessee to win the SEC championship game. It's going to take a huge effort for that team. They've got to get over some mental things, which I think is real in sports. It's not made up that there's humps to get over, but I think they can this year. If I had a team that I said was going to be surprising, I don't think they're going to contend for the division title, but I do kind of like Kentucky for some reason this season. So they would be sort of my team off the beaten path that could get to 8 wins. I think the team that sets up as far as maybe the most disappointing, I just look at Mississippi and say, I like their talent. I really do.
I think it's feast or famine. I think you're right. I think there's a feast or famine factor for them.
You open up with Florida State, and then 12 days later you play Alabama, and then 7 days later you play Georgia. I mean, I like their talent, but that schedule is not easy. Granted, it's all at home, so that's the one benefit.
And that's why I went with them. I think because you got to look at the playoff committee and what they're going to be looking at. I think the schedule, the whole package, sets up for Mississippi if they take care of their business to be a team in that Final Four at the end of the season. And you know, when I look around, as we've talked about, the one familiar theme, we're looking around the league, we're looking for quarterbacks, we're looking for playmakers. They've got the one of the few guys that is proven. My question will be, again, will they be able to stop somebody in the fourth quarter of a football game? I think that's a huge question for this club right now. But I think this is a team that's going to play with a chip on their shoulder. They've got a quarterback who is, you know, from a playing and athletic standpoint, you know, he's kind of got the intestinal fortitude of a Johnny Manziel like he had a couple years ago in Texas A&M.
He's got the swagger.
He does have some swagger, and I think that helps. You've got to have.
He's dripping with that swag juice.
He is indeed. And I like Hugh Freeze. I think there's a lot to like there. There's a lot of new defensive coordinators around the league. I just think that this Ole Miss offense has the ability maybe to make a play. That's always the constant theme. You hear coaches talk about it all the time. Make a play. They've got the quarterback that has proven he can make a play. That's why I'm leaning that way. If something happens to him or them early in the season you know, come November, I mean, it's all Nick Saban all the time.
It's,
as far as I'm
it's never a bad theory. When in doubt, go with the team with the best quarterback in football. That's a strategy that can work. So that'll wrap up our first podcast, and I hope everybody enjoys it, downloads it, and we'll do similar previews for the Big Ten, the ACC, the AAC, the Pac-12, the Big 12. We'll get all those down for you over the next couple weeks, and then, of course, we'll get started with the college football season. Pete, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, 3 weeks.